The program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, you know what time it is. It is the best Tuesday I've had all week, and it's time for the True Wealth Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Littlejohn. Joining me in studio today
Matt Dixon.
Yeah, but we brought back our favorite ringer and our favorite attorney. Joining me today?
Derek Simmons.
All right, so now you've heard all of our names. So you got Dave, Matt, and Derek, okay? And I don't care which order you put the initials in.
I do. I totally do.
You want the D to
we
be
need
first.
The D first. I don't care what else happens.
Awesome. All right. So today's show, Matt and I were talking about this. Derek, we bring in mostly because of his high IQ and color commentary.
And astonishing sense of humor. It's yeah. True.
So we did not prep him for this, which is why it's fun. Of course, I'm going to guess that you're going to latch onto this one quickly anyway. The question is about financial planning and what we're calling the myth of the perfect plan.
No, it's not true. I've got the perfect, I've got the perfect plan. It did not pan out. Is that
go
make it
on.
Imperfect in some way?
All right.
it's totally marry well.
Ah, yes. Or one of my other favorites that you've said is pick your parents well.
Pick your parents well is also exceptionally good plan.
Yeah, if you could do that, just pick your parents and then you'll be fine.
Sadly, I failed at that one early. Excellent parents, but not perfect on a financial planning front.
Yeah. Well, here's the really interesting one about this. And years ago, when I remember naming the True Wealth Radio Show, I was like, well, why would you call it that? The philosophy was really built around the idea that wealth is a subjective term, right? I mean, it's a subjective term, and rich is a subjective term. And so how can we live lives that make you feel wealthy, okay? And so, and then what do we invariably do? We talk about money, right?
But that is not all. I remember you telling me, hey, sometimes you do things that are not designed to create money. They're designed to create invaluable memories.
Yep. Well, that's because that is the part of the shtick,
and
right?
This is the ideal time for me to hijack your show.
By all means.
And tell you that I am in this play at UACT.
He's going to do the French accent.
I am going
again.
To do the French accent.
Okay.
Yes. It is Picasso at the Lapine Agile, a Steve Martin play, and I play the art dealer, or if you're paying close attention, the art dealer.
Yeah.
See? Look at me go.
Matt, just so you know, the plan here, I've got permission to remember the cool thing we did with our ad in the playbill?
Yes.
Right? So I'm speaking in code because we're on the radio, but we did something kind of cool. So they said we can make T-shirts and the UACT team will wear the shirts.
That will be fun. Yes.
Well, that'll be awesome.
So
are we doing this?
We're going to get some custom T-shirts made for UACT. And it's themed for the play.
That's cool.
Fun.
This is why UACT loves Little John Financial Services.
So, well, we're going to have fun with this one. I love, frankly, being involved with our local community. It's interesting because we've got clients literally all over the world, right? But we still have like a physical presence here in Douglas County, and it's fun to be able to participate in our community. So,
and we need callers to call and say, Dave, you have to try out for one of these plays.
Oh,
that would
everyone
be so much
encourage
fun.
Him to
yeah,
do this.
That's should totally happen.
Hey, we all know that your working IQ is really high, and you'd be able to memorize lines like no one's business. So I want to see this. You have no excuses.
Just because you can say the lines doesn't mean you can act. Just so we're clear.
Well,
I think it would be great fun.
Yeah,
the
favorite
this,
one is,
Derek,
tell you what,
this.
Here, let's have some fun with this. If we're going to really go for it, let's make it a musical, right? And so can we see if Dave could memorize things and sing all at the same time? The good news is I've got a ringer of a deal. First of all, you have to get cast.
There is that.
So I could be so incompetent it could never happen. But if you think I should try out, then go ahead and send us email. Send us an email and say, yeah, get Dave in you act. And it's info@littlejohnfs.com. And the scary thing is this is like online, so we could end up getting spammed like crazy for it too.
Okay, so I know you want to get back on topic. And so that's why I'm just going to remind you that you need to buy your tickets now because it starts next week and runs for only 3 weekends.
Yeah, I got my tickets.
All right, well done.
Yeah, but that's how sponsorship works.
When I say you, I may have been speaking to the rest of the listening audience. Yeah. Yes, okay. I know it's crazy, isn't it?
Yes.
What's one of the coolest parts about being there in person, live, watching this? I mean, I'm sure you've watched a few, not just, you know, been a participant.
What's one of your favorite things? One of the fun things is when something goes wrong on stage.
Yeah.
And watching people adapt to it is really, it's spectacular, and it only happens in live performances.
That's true.
Not that I want things to go wrong, mind you.
Sure.
But it is interesting when it happens.
So I had the pleasure of watching a production at UACT a couple of years ago that Derek was in called Puffs. Puffs is about Hufflepuff, which is one of the Harry Potter houses, right? Harry Potter was a Gryffindor, right? And the bad guys were Slytherin. And then there's also Ravenclaw.
The
and
smart
Hufflepuff,
people. Yeah.
Right. And you don't really know much about Ravenclaw or Hufflepuff. And somewhere an author got this clever idea to write a play, but since he didn't really have formal permission, they wrote it close enough that you knew, but it was all through innuendo and so forth. And so they had Puffs about Hufflepuff, and you got to see this whole other group. And it was there was a whole bunch of improv, and it was quite hysterical.
Like, it really was.
Like I've not been to a play and laughed that hard before. And I've been to some comedies, and that one was just terrific.
But anyway, we're talking about true wealth plans, financial plans.
And you just mentioned something, Derek. You were talking about how one of the best parts of being at one of these plays is sometimes things go wrong, right? And stuff goes off the rails. David, I'm going to pick your brain. That's actually kind of what the show is about, right? Like what happens when the plan, you know, kind of goes sideways? Maybe start by talking to the listeners a little bit about some of the ways over your career that you have seen like a plan go sideways. What's caused that? What are some of the major contributors to someone's plan falling apart?
Okay. So I love the question. I'm going to ask a pre-question to it.
Can he do that?
No.
All right. Not
allowed. I'm going to ask Matt the pre-question because it's sort of in the order for our listeners. Like some of you guys are going, great. Well, what happens if the plan goes wrong? But a bunch of you are going, what happens if I don't even have a plan?
Well, if you don't have a plan, you just wing it and hope for the best. And then you live in the land of uncertainty and terror. And so you work sometimes longer than you have to, or, you know, you just live in a state of always feeling like you can't spend money.
You know, the one that kills me is worrying, because I do occasionally see clients who are ungodly worried about something that is not a threat for them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can relieve them of that worry, it helps enormously. But only by making the plan, going through the process, can you figure out where you are and where you're going.
You know, you hit on something we don't even have in our notes that I'm going to kind of latch onto for a sec for our listeners too. Process, right? The planning process is really, I'll use the term revelatory, right? It reveals things. And the cool thing about the process is, I think people, this is where we're saying that the myth is that there's this perfect plan. There's not. The plan is forever a work in progress because life is pretty messy. Things come up, things that you didn't anticipate. Rules change, locations change, jobs change, circumstances change. And so, you know, there's an old expression in the military, right? No plan survives first contact, right? So then you have plan B or plan C, and you have contingencies. But what you really have is a process of how you're going to approach problem solving and managing. And so I like what you said, Derek, this idea, the worry usually comes because you don't have adequate information, or you've got something else going on where what you're really trying to do is, I guess You're worried because of the unknown, right? That's the fear behind it or whatever else it is. But what happens if what you think you know and what isn't so?
Yeah.
That's probably the most common thing. When you think you know isn't so. So, yeah, if you're hearing me scramble a little bit, it's like, well, I didn't plan this as part of our script. I'm just going, yeah, that's probably a biggie. So your pre-question, Matt, is just first, a lot of people, maybe they don't have plans, but there's a step right in between too. What about people that say, well, I'm going to make plans once this thing occurs? Okay? So
yeah.
It's one of those where like, oh, well, I'm going to, this is a fun one. You'll love this, Derek. I'm going to go ahead and get my estate plan done after my kids are born. And I go, I'm sorry, say that again.
I hear this from folks all the time. When they come in for estate planning, they want a will or a trust or something. One of the questions I often ask is, what caused you to come in now? And 80, 90% of the time, the answer is someone close to me died. They weren't prepared. I didn't realize that's the way it worked.
Yeah.
They just don't know.
Yep. And so I think one of the toughies is we don't necessarily prepare folks for a lot of the elements of real life, right? When we send our kids through school, they get to learn, you know, math and writing and some of the different social subjects, and hopefully they develop some skills socially as they navigate through the system and what have. But how much do we really teach about things like money, right? I remember learning how to balance a checkbook and how to fill out a 1040 EZ. That was the extent of my financial knowledge coming out of college.
And that may be more than most people have.
That's the scary part, right? And I've said this many times. I'm not here to dog on the system. What I'm saying is the system is not well equipped to teach people this stuff. And so what happens is life teaches it to you the hard way, right? So what we're going to try to do on this show is help you to, one, maybe dispel some fear and worry. Two, let's talk about how we can help get you onto the path of a plan. So we'll come back to this question you had, Matt, of like, well, what are things that are mistakes I've said? Maybe what we do is we talk about, instead of them all of the mistakes, is, you know, what are some of the mistakes and what are the easiest ways to correct them, right? Mm-hmm. You may be surprised to learn that it doesn't take an exotic plan. It doesn't have to be high level detail here. But if I could get you to pull out a napkin and start writing on the back of it, we could make some progress, all right? But speaking of progress, we got to progress into our first break, okay? So we'll do that, and then when we come back, Matt, I promise I'll get your question eventually, right? I'll just do it in a really circuitous fashion.
There we go.
Cool. All right, stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And Derek Simmons.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show, where we got our studio full, and again, it is warm in studio, and I'm grateful that it's still Aloha August. I'm going to cling to this last week for all we've got. This is so Matt, how have I done so far?
I think 10 out of 10.
My goal was to wear an Aloha shirt for every single day of the
month. I don't remember you missing. There was one that was a little suspect, but if you looked at it, you know, really close.
It was a blue-on-blue print. It was like dark blue and dark blue. So they're like, I don't know. And then they're like, yeah, we'll pass it.
Yeah.
Jeez, I didn't even think it was that hard.
When you commit to something, it's spooky. You can really move mountains here.
Okay, we're talking about today, the myth of the perfect plan, and we were going to start with some of the things that people sometimes mistakenly do, thinking they either are plans or they are not plans, and how can we help folks get on the right track faster, okay? So I think the first one we talked about is avoiding a plan altogether.
Right.
Right? So, like, you're just not going to do it. You're going to put your head in the sand, hope it goes away. It's a bad idea,
mm-hmm.
right? It's a bad idea on many, many levels, but it's a bad idea because Obviously, no decision is still a decision, right? No plan is just a really bad plan.
Yeah.
Right? It's a plan to just be reactive and hope for the best. So we are advocating for more than that. But beyond that, what do you think is the next most common thing that people screw up?
I'd say making a plan that you're going to do it later and calling that a plan.
Okay, the deferral plan,
yes.
Right? Yes, we've won the toss, but we've elected to defer to the second half.
I think it's really, I mean, you guys must hear it way more than I do. I will start saving when I can afford to start saving.
Yeah. It's a big one.
Yeah, that's probably one of the biggest mistakes you can make too, is that if you don't pay yourself first, there won't be anything left, right? Now, when I say pay yourself first, right, that's something that we say enough in the financial industry that it just seems to make sense to us. But I'm not going to pretend that every listener out there understands what I mean. Matt, what is pay yourself first?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people want to take all the money right now, right? Because they just want to go have fun or they feel like they need to spend it all. But you have to look at your future self and say, what about that person? When I wake up 30 years from now, is there going to be, you know, some reserves? And so if you're taking care of your future self, you're saving today so that you're going to be in a better spot tomorrow.
Okay. You want to add anything to that, Derek?
No, I think that's a good summary.
Yeah. I like the pay yourself first. When you have a budget, is the first item on the budget is to apportion the savings,
mm-hmm.
right? So you set aside the savings first. That way you're committed to it. It's sort of like having a non-negotiable. Here's the thing. Savings is kind of like eating healthy, right? You either do it or you don't do it.
Right.
But if you say, I'm going to eat healthy tomorrow, then what you really did was you deferred it. And not only that, you compounded the damage because you didn't eat healthy today.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so over time, that behavior continues to compound and it leads to adverse outcomes. It's a way of saying bad stuff. Right. And so same story with money. If you do not save anything, and the toughest part about this is you got to separate wants from needs, right? And you have to acknowledge where you're at. The truth of the matter is there are some people that live paycheck to paycheck that really are being super careful, and there is very, very little margin or extra in their life. So the ability to save is very, very limiting, right? The number one thing that I think somebody should do when you're in that circumstance is upgrade your ability to earn. That is the first place to invest. Is if you are genuinely cutting out all the fat and you're running as lean as possible and it's still not enough, it's because you're in a non-living wage job. And so if you're in a non-living wage job, the number one thing that I think people struggle with is thinking that the job owes them money rather than thinking that they need to be able to provide more value to the marketplace to be compensated for it. And I know that it can come off as really insensitive when somebody says something like that. That's not why I'm saying it. I'm not trying to hit below the belt with somebody and say, like, you are not good enough. That's not what's happening here. What I'm saying is you can't take a job that's not a living wage job and force it to be a living wage job. There's no economic theory where that works out. All we're doing is sort of regulating and displacing things. And in the short term, right, this is sort of like when we printed money during COVID and everybody said, yay, money. And then today everything's way more expensive. And they go, why is inflation so bad? And I go, we all told you this would happen. Everybody said, if you print money, it will catch up and it will be a problem. And everybody was like, put their fingers in their ears and la 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 la, because if you didn't want to hear that, then you didn't want to hear that. But we're here, and that's what happened. So that's the reality of your circumstances.
Well, I had a mentor tell me for many years, there are only two ways to make more money.
Oh, do I know this mentor?
You do, in fact. It was work more or cut expenses. Those are the two
options.
Yeah,
drive revenue, cut expenses.
Yep.
And there's only two ways to increase your value in the marketplace, right? Scarcity of something that's desirable or leverage, right? You can be the only person that can do what LeBron James or Michael Jordan or those guys could do, right? You're that person. Pro athletes, people want to see it.
So there's demand.
So there's demand, and not many people can do it.
So there's scarcity.
Scarcity.
And that's why they make umpteen billion dollars.
They make tons of money because of that cocktail, right? If they just were washing cars, I don't care how awesome you are at washing cars. If you're the best car washer in the world, you'll make more than average per car wash because you do a great job.
Now, to be fair, I started out with a financial plan to be a professional athlete. It just didn't work out.
Yes. Well, so the plan was perfect. The execution wasn't.
Oh, yes, there we go.
But you guys get the idea, right? The car washer. Now, if you wanted to become, if you wanted to own a business that washes cars and employ 50 people, and you could get enough people coming through to get those cars washed, maybe you don't employ people. Maybe you own a car wash, right? Now,
that's leverage.
You're leveraging your time. Yes. And so you can make more than if you were hand scrubbing all those cars, even if you're the very best at it. Because there's something called substitution, right? How do you substitute a pro athlete, right? You bring in somebody that's not a pro athlete, nobody wants to watch anymore. So there really isn't a substitute. That's why the scarcity works for them. But if you have a commodity style of work, right? Well, I can be a great car washer, but am I so good that I can charge 10 times more than the other guy next to me? That's like, well, I'm 95% as good, but I'm a tenth of the price. And everybody says,
I'm there.
I'll substitute, right? That's the issue. These are economic principles at play. I'm just explaining them in like really, you know, low-hanging fruit mechanisms here. So, yeah, you start with, so first, don't delay, right? Second, understand where the value comes from. You got to produce margin to pay yourself first. That's a really long way to get to pay yourself first. I feel like I owe our listeners an apology.
We appreciate you running the long road.
We could have just said, well, we got it. Why are you explaining this into the dirt, man?
Matt and I were able to work in a nap during that. It was really well done.
Okay, well, you know what? You guys can carry the next one here. So if the first one was about the not planning, okay, what's the impact of delayed savings?
It's going to be less because the magic of saving money is that it grows over time. You invest it, you get interest or some sort of return. And if you invest it later, it has less time to accrue interest or increase, and you end up with less.
Yeah. I mean, it's that simple, right? So you could, if you don't pay yourself first, but someday you do, you just have less time. Okay. That's the, also time is leverage. It's just another version of it, right? Because it's money making the money for you, right? It's magnifying your effort. And so that's really the key here. So what we really talk about, and this is a separate, you know, business consulting thing. We're not doing the show on this, but developing multiple streams of income, right? That's a way of leveraging. It's like, well, can I get other things working on my behalf so that I'm able to create faster accumulation of earnings? Okay. And that's really a different mindset when you get into like the billionaire mindset versus the millionaire mindset versus the mainstream mindset. Right, is some people trade their time for money. Other people start to accumulate assets. And then you get into the really huge stuff, which is these are people that are like buying large scale businesses that are doing business with countless people. Right? Amazon has tens of millions of customers. And so even if they're making a fraction of a cent per transaction, but they're doing millions of transactions a day, that turns into a lot of money. Right? That's playing at a different scale than the local real estate investor or the person that's figuring out the job upgrade.
But back at our scale,
yeah.
I know one of the things that suggests about starting late, not starting, is trying to time the market.
Probably one of the hardest things is, great, we're saving, where do we put it? This one's a fun one, and we should probably get this really simple. So, Matt, how good are you at timing the market?
Well, it depends on the year. Some years you look spectacular, and some years you look kind of like, what's this guy thinking?
Yeah, right? How about you personally? How good are you at timing the market?
I mean, this year I was definitely, you know, a little early to pull some funds out because I was like, yeah, you know, I think we're going to get a pullback, and the market just kept going and going and going and going and going. Right. So,
P.S., Matt's a pro.
Yeah.
Right? So and I did not do this to put you on the spot, but to remind our listeners, timing the market is extremely difficult. And here's an interesting one. So there's a study that I believe JP Morgan Chase did, and they looked at two different investors. One of them attempted to time the market. I don't remember the exact
Peter Perfect.
Well, I mean, this is in their example, but they had a story about there was a way that they attempted to time the market, right? And it was not necessarily successful, but in this case, there was Peter who did time the market perfectly. So, hit the bottom of the market each time once a year, hit the bottom of the market, and then got invested. And then there was Ashley who just said, you know what? As soon as I get paid, I invest it,
mm-hmm.
right? And they put $2,000 a year in, I think, over a period of 20 years,
right?
And at the end of it. So they put put about 40 grand in. Peter's market value was just over 138,000. But Ashley's was 127,500. So it's about an 8% difference. Okay?
Between perfect and just average.
And so you look at that and go, so the 8% difference, and people go, yeah, but 8% if you compound it. Said, no, we didn't compound it. That was over 20 years.
Yeah.
Right? And so it illustrates how, one, it's difficult to time the market, but two, timing the market is less valuable the longer your time horizon.
Getting the money, yeah.
Right? The longer your time horizon, the less the intraday market movement matters to you. So, yeah, you got a two-month time horizon, it's important. But if you've got a 20-year horizon, yeah, it starts to kind of work its way out in the wash. So, anyway. And with that... Speaking of wash, we got to wash the clock. No, watch the clock. It's we're long. We got to grab this break. So we are going to do that. When we come back, we got a few more things to help you guys along the planning pathway. And I'll give you a hint. It's not more market timing. So, all right, stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And Sago, the art dealer.
You're listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM. And 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with me today is...
Matt Dixon.
And Derek Simmons.
And we are talking about the lack of perfect plan in the world, right? And here's the interesting one. I sat in a meeting today, heard a great quote. I'm actually going to give credit to it because I can sometimes, and these are fun. It's probably not hers originally, but this is from Dr. Pokrant, who's the president at UCC. And she says... she runs into folks that get paralyzed by decisions, and sometimes you don't make the right decision. You make a decision, and then you make it right. And I really like that because I've heard and used this often. I said, no decision is still a decision. Okay, and so in the planning world, no plan is just a bad plan, right? It's kind of like not managing risk is just bad mismanagement, right? And when we're talking about mistakes that people make, some of these are tough. So at the break, we were talking about this a little bit. One of the things that I sometimes hear from people is, well, I'm going to pay off some of this stuff, and then I'm going to get started with my plan, right? And what I'm going to say is, okay, but I'm also going to kind of give you the parent look and say, are you telling me what I want to hear, or is this really a behavior change? Because the behavior that built the stuff up that you owe, right? This is, in particular, this is a credit card debt conversation. And I'm not Dave Ramsey, right? You guys have probably heard him, and he'll come in here and read you the riot act about it, right? He's going to say credit card debt is dumb, and I pretty much agree. Like, there's not a reason to have credit card debt. But if you do, then what, right? And I would say this is what the baby steps are for. Right. So, get a savings, get an emergency reserve, and then start chipping away smallest to biggest and literally follow the steps. OK. But for those of you guys that are saying, well, I'll start planning after I pay off X. OK. That creates, I think, a problem, because what you're really doing is you're just phantom deferring. Right. You're using an excuse to not address it. It's the equivalent of procrastination. OK, because what I would tell you is, fine, tell me your payoff plan.
And then that's part of the plan.
Yeah. You know, what's going to be your behavior modification that gives you the ability to this time pay this off, not go back into debt for something else, and start making progress? Because here's the real problem. And a lot of you guys listening, you're going to get this immediately, right? Most of our listeners, I think, pretty smart. It's the folks that go out there and pretend they're victims of their own bad decisions. It's really hard to tolerate when somebody says, well, I have all this debt. And you go, well, look at all of the depreciating non-asset things that you put in your life that were completely unnecessary, that you insisted you had to have, and now it's a noose around your neck, and you somehow think that it's somebody else's fault.
That's a problem.
That's a really hard one for folks that don't do that to say, well, who made you do it?
This is why 31% of Gen Z has no retirement fund.
Yeah. Well, and you hear things from Gen Z that sound like rationalization and justification. Mm-hmm. And we know what that sounds like. Things like, well, I'd rather have experiences than a big house. So, okay, yeah. But would you rather have experiences than a place to live?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? You're making it, by sort of positioning it as, well, having a place to live is just, you know, I'm just kind of caving to the man. Like, what? Here's your basic test. I got a silly test for you on this one, right? Okay. If I dropped you in the middle of the jungle with no civilization around you at all, would it still make sense? Okay. Because right about the time when somebody says, oh, you have a right to something. And I go, well, did the right come from all of the neighbors banding together to give everybody the same thing? Or did the right come from, like, you have a right? Natural versus social rights. Big deal on this one, guys. If I throw you in the jungle and there's a bear, the bear does not care whether or not you have free health care. Right? The bear will eat you if it's hungry. And you can say, like, well, that's not fair. So who said you think about fair? The bear's higher on the food chain at that point. What you need is a bunch of friends with the ability to protect yourself. And now you guys can all band together and agree to protect each other. Now you have a social contract to protect yourself from the bear.
So one part of your plan should be a sharp stick carried around with you.
It could be if you're in the woods, right? The point of this is back to the don't tell me that you're allowed to make terrible decisions and everybody else is responsible for them. Okay? It's just not going to happen on this show. You're not going to get that kind of validation from somebody like, oh, poor you for making knucklehead decisions. Okay. Poor you that houses are way more expensive for millennials for Gen Z than they were for the baby boomer counterparts. Yeah, actually, that kind of sucks. The system has been stacked in a way that's a lot harder. And so that's a legitimate gripe. But you can't tell me, well, because the system is hard now, I can do whatever I want and be reckless because I'm somehow justified. No, we all have different things, right? You didn't want to grow up in the Great Depression either, let me tell you. They didn't even have air conditioner, or Xbox.
Much like here.
No, I was going to say
no Xbox and no air conditioning. It's true.
Yeah.
What the heck kind of radio show is this, Dave?
Hot.
I expect a green room, and I want it to be cool.
No, me too. Oh, gosh. Winter is coming, though, right? Literally, too. So let's unpack now that I've given everybody a good chiding about behaviors that they probably don't even have. So, right.
And preaching to the choir.
Yeah. Well, preach to the choir while we all go uphill to school in the snow, both directions. Right. Shoes optional. So let's run this scenario that you had, Derek, if you're okay with that.
Sure.
I thought this was a really interesting question.
You said,
well, what happens? You had a family. Well, I'm not even gonna say that.
I had
it could be a family member, but you have a person that you're associated with.
Yeah, I had a close friend who contacted me and said, here's the problem, is that I'm going to be out of work for a while. I have credit card debt that's pretty substantial. And I also have this small amount of savings in my retirement plan. And the question was, should I take money out of the retirement plan to pay off the credit cards? And it's too bad. You know, it's two bad choices. Either you're going to pay interest at an exorbitant rate on the credit cards every month, or you're going to pay a penalty when you take your money out of the retirement plan and deferred taxes.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's actually a third choice that was sort of hidden in there. It's not really a choice, but it was a third behavior that brought this about too, because of the failure to follow a structured plan, right?
Yeah.
Which is, there should be some emergency reserves in place and not a credit card balance,
right,
in order to have the investments.
True.
Because now what you're forced to do is not only look at liquidating an investment that has a tax penalty associated with it, but you could have a market penalty as well, because you're dealing with a forced liquidation, which means you've lost the ability to be discretionary with your time. And once you do that, like, now you've got you got all kinds of risks that have been in play here. And it would have, if had you simply had that 3 to 6 month of emergency savings,
you could have ridden longer.
You wouldn't be invading that, right? Because my guess is that this person you're associated with, or this, you know, whoever in this scenario is saying, well, I think I'm going to be able to go back to work and start earning again. It's just a disruption in my earning right now.
Right.
Okay, so therein lies the issue, is the disruption in earnings, inadequate reserves, and now what are we doing? We're going to liquidating retirement funds that come with penalties.
And I have a really hard time in this conversation not saying, go back in time and don't run up the credit card debt.
Yeah.
But that's not a viable question at this point.
So the question is, what do you do today?
Yeah.
And I think you rightfully said, no, we can't give. If you're in this situation, what we can do is give you a scenario for, like, how do you assess this? I'm not going to tell you what to do. Okay, I'm not going to give you advice on the air. What I'm going to tell you is, we don't really do credit counseling, but, you know, if I can tell you how to do this, and that is, run the numbers, do the math, right? What's your interest rate? What's your tax rate? Okay.
And penalty.
And your tax rate plus penalty. So typically speaking, you're talking about probably somewhere between 10 and 12% at a federal level for most people. Could be a little higher, but if you're 10 to 12% plus a 10% penalty, so that's 20 to 22% federal tax.
Which probably lines up very smoothly with the credit card interest rate.
Right. And so then the question is, how long is the debt, right? If you're going to get to where it's less than 12 months and you're going to be back to earning again, and then you think you could pay it off in less than 12 months after that, I would suggest that you are probably still ahead to aggressively pay that credit card down rather than liquidating retirement funds. If that is not on the horizon, then it's painful, but at some point it's the lesser evil numerically is, all right, cash out the plan and get that debt gone, and then learn from this and don't reproduce that.
Right.
Which is still a boo-hoo kind of scenario. I'm like that, no, that's not good in many ways, but yeah, you just don't want to get there.
Well, I am fortunate that this particular person is an extremely hard worker and will find other work.
Yeah, and I also want to make sure that I'm saying, like, I'm not judging the person for this, right? Your money is not what makes you have any value. That's not the way we associate. You know, your money is not who you are, right? And yeah, we make decisions where we're like, probably should have done something different. But do you learn from it?
That's okay. The key.
That's the key. All right. So, speaking of learning, I'm going to learn to take a break. We got to do that before we run out of time. So last one, when we come back, we just got a couple of, like, really simple tips that if you were to follow these basics, I think that you'd be well on your way to a plan without doing a lot of heavy lifting. Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
Matt Dixon.
And Derek Simmons.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM, 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the home stretch of the True Wealth Radio Show, where we are going to do something that I think is really, really important. We're going to brighten the mood up on this one. Gosh, I feel like the last segment I was like, you know, kicking puppies or something. So, no bueno. See, by the way, there's a challenge at the office. Like, can Dave make a reference to kicking puppies? And yeah, sometimes I can. Not because we want to, by the way. This is just awful. Why would you do that?
Interesting challenges at your office.
Yeah, yeah. They're born in really weird circumstances. That's all I can tell you. All right. So here's the deal. for anybody that find, if you're like well on your way with your plan and everything is good, awesome. Like, congratulations, first of all, and literally good job. Like, I am, it always encourages me when I see people that have made sound financial decisions, and as a result, you know, largely good things have happened. It doesn't mean you're immune from stress and everything else, but good things work out because you're making those elementary moves, right? But for those of you that are just getting started, or let's say if you're younger and you're listening, or if you have younger people and you're just looking for the segment that they should hear, they don't need to get beat up on the last one. They need to hear this, right? Okay, Derek.
Yes.
When's the best day to plant a tree?
30 years ago.
Exactly. But when's the next best day?
Well, that's got to be today.
Yeah. You have this chance to make a change, right? That doesn't make it easy or anything else. But I think that financial changes tend to be some of the easier, right? If I was telling you to quit smoking, that's actually really hard. If I was telling you to give up processed foods, they taste good. They're designed to be addictive. That's pretty hard. But if I was telling you to say, hey, how about you just rearrange your spending and start doing some savings first, right? If I could convince you, what if I could make it a game for you to just try to start saving somewhere between 50 and 500 bucks a month? Okay, now I'll tell you where those numbers come from, right? 50 bucks a month is just low-hanging fruit, right? I think most of us should be able to figure out how to do that, right? And what it is it's something to build off of. Now, if you can save something akin to about it's $583 a month. This one is actually a number that matters. Matt, why do I choose this number?
I have no idea, to be honest.
Really?
No.
Oh, no.
Where does this come from?
It's if you look at the maximum contribution to an IRA or a Roth IRA, and you break it down into a monthly amount, right? Mm. So for a lot of folks, you're probably qualified for a Roth IRA. These are really interesting instruments. Again, not making recommendations, but like, Derek, do you know why I like Roth IRAs so much?
Because all the growth is tax-free.
Yeah, but more so, well, yeah, all the growth is tax-free. That's a biggie. But there's more. The growth is also, there's no required distributions, which gives you flexibility for your planning. Also, if you don't spend it someday, it's a great estate planning tool because your heirs can also receive it tax-free.
True.
Which makes this a really cool instrument. Oh, and guess what? You pay for it with money that you've already paid taxes on. And if you need to, you can actually go in and pull that money back out because you've already paid the taxes on it. So it's a remarkably flexible instrument. Had this person that you knew in the prior segment had a Roth account as opposed to a traditional or 401k style investment account, they may have actually been able to use some of that without penalty in order to help address their circumstance, right? Another, so really cool flexible features, right? But that number, right? I think this year's $7,000 limit if you're 50 or if you're under 50 years old, right? So that's roughly $583 a month if you were to just kind of say, well, divide that by 12. That's where the number comes from. And so 50 bucks gets you started, but if I can get you up to 500 bucks a month and you start doing that, here's the crazy thing. You invest in a Roth, if you did $583 a month and you do that for 30 years, okay? It's not as much as you think. So $7,000 a year times 30 years, right? So that's $210,000. Yes, it's a lot of money, right? But you have any idea what that's probably worth if you invest it in the stock market and receive typical returns?
A couple million.
Well, it's well over a million, right? Like 1.4, 1.6 million. So you'd have a seven-figure account tax-free.
And that's because that first 7,000 has 30 years to grow.
Yes.
And the second 7,000 has 29 years to grow.
Yes.
That's why it gets to be a big number.
Right. The power of compounding is really staggering. It turns out that I saw a study at some point that had somebody invested a lot like Warren Buffett over the same time period of his life, they wouldn't have had as much money. But if they'd have just been able to invest in the S&P 500, they'd still be a billionaire. Right? It's crazy how it will compound if you've got 80 years to do it, right? So same story. If you've got kids and you start a Roth IRA for them or something when they're little kids, they have no idea what kind of gift you've just offered them. Because it's not that you have to pour tons of money. You don't have to put $210,000 in, because you're giving them an extra 20, 30 years. They're getting to compound for 60 years.
That's the key.
Instead of 30. That's radical. Because here's, you know the rule of 72?
Your money should double in 72 months?
No. This is a fun
I
hack.
Think it should,
Matt,
though.
Matt,
that's kind of fun.
Do you know this one?
Well, I thought it was around that 7-year mark, right? Like, so if you are invested in getting, what was it? Was it
70% returns? It's a math hack. Mm. It's take the number 72, divide it by your rate of return, and that's how long it takes to double your investment.
That's
if you
right.
don't pay taxes, right? So if you have 72 and you make 12% a year, you can double every 6 years, right? So if you make 14%, then you double in like every, you know, 5-point-something years, right? It's wild. You know, if you have 36% per year, you double every 2 years, right? Because 36% on the first year, then you compound it by 36 the next year, you've doubled. So that's the whole cheat of the rule of 72. Now, taxes blow that up because if you have to pay taxes as you go and all. But anyway, it doesn't take that much. The magic is get started. And if you made terrible decisions between now and then, you know what the other thing is? Let it go. Learn from it. But it's useless to beat yourself up, right?
I think learn
from it.
That's got to be important in your office. You take people as they come in.
Yep.
And you say, hey, don't beat yourself up. Let's just make a plan going forward.
I have a simple phrase. I say, I meet you where you're at. I do not care what brought you here. I care where you're going. That's the whole reason you start working with the planner. It's not to be judged. It's to figure out what you want to do different, right? And so that's it. Anyway, looking at the clock here, let's do this. Matt, how do people reach us if they need to get started on their planning journey?
Yeah, you can give us a call or text us at the office number, which is 541-375-0898. Or you can shoot us an email at info@littlejohnfs.com.
And Derek, how can they reach you if they need to do any kind of legal stuff?
The best way to find us is at our website, seriousbusiness.law.
All right. Well, we're out of time. Gotta run.